check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
On this episode of the Heat Check, we're going to be talking women's hoops because, let's face it, it's the biggest story going right now. We're going to break down the impact that is Caitlin Clark having on the NBA. We'll get into some serious NBA beef between two unlikely NBA figures. And we chat other news from around the league, including the return of JoJo Embiid. Barbecuing you like fried chicken. A ton to get to, Anthony, so let's get into it and drop that motherfucking beat that should be Rihanna. All right. Do not bet, folks, against Caitlin Clark. That is a mistake. That is an absolute, just a rookie move that I made against LSU. Listen, like, LSU did beat Iowa last year, but they did not strap Caitlin Clark. And they did not strap Caitlin Clark in this matchup as well. I learned this firsthand in the Elite Eight. I backed LSU with my hard-earned cash, and I regretted it pretty much immediately. And like a lot of people, the past year is fading Caitlin Clark. I got empty pockets as a result. It's time to talk about the women's game, folks, and the moment that we are having. So we've got our women's Final Four bracket set, right? It's South Carolina. We knew they were going to be in it. It's UConn. We figured they would be in it. Iowa, and of course, we hoped they would be in it. And then the dark horse in the men's and the women's tournament is NC State, the Wild Wolfpack. Ow! Ow! Just a just exactly the kind of Elite Eight Final Four that got us here that was electric. The star power on Monday night was out of control. Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese. Angel Reese putting her crown on the bench. Flauge, Haley Van Lith for the opener, and then Paige Beckers and Juju Watkins to close out the night. So if you're like just a casual fan of the game, you should probably be acquainted with these women because this is just an incredible slate of athletes that are going to continue to rise as we get further down the line. Women's hoops are booming. The Iowa LSU title game last year, by the way, was the highest rated women's basketball game of all time. 12.6 million viewers. While that peaked at 12.6, the actual ratings were around 10 million viewers. So we wanted to know, what would the rematch do? What would the Elite Eight matchup between these two squads give us? 12.3 million views. Oh my goodness. Just one of those scenarios where you can say, that 12.3 million viewers means the game had more eyeballs than, get this, any women's college basketball game ever, the 2023 NBA Finals, pretty fucking good, the 2023 World Series, the 2023 Orange Bowl, Cotton Bowl, Peach Bowl, the 2023 Big Ten, Pac-12, Big 12, and ACC football championships, every single Thursday night football game probably ever in existence, every 2023 college football regular season game except for Ohio State and Michigan. But that is not all, folks. Vegas insider Patrick Everson told me on my other show, BetMGM Tonight, that this game had the most money bet on it in women's college hoops history. It outgrossed any NBA game on the same night. Money, money, money. And with Caitlin, Flauge, Angel, balling out, no wonder. We had Angel Reese player props. We had Caitlin Clark player props. And guess what? cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. That's what Caitlyn do. That is what Caitlyn do. Caitlin Clark, though, she's gone from, oh, hey, did you know there was a girl that plays for Iowa that's, like, shooting threes, like, her name's Steph Curry, to, oh, my God, I love Caitlin Clark. Everyone loves Caitlin Clark. We think she's the greatest thing since sliced bread, to, you know, I kind of hate Caitlin Clark. That's where the evolution of the casual fan and how they feel about her. She's very, right now, very controversial figure. I want to be on the record and say that's not me. That's not my opinion. I love Caitlin Clark, so don't clip it, flip it, and reverse it on me. But for good or for bad, in a weekend where the men's bracket, NC State knocked off Duke, and UConn continued one of its most dominant runs in college basketball history, the number one topic of conversation in women's hoops. Caitlin, Juju, Paige, Angel, female players going by one name, HVL. Huh? Haley Van Lith, a.k.a. The Cone. Being recognized by pretty much every hoophead in the country. Even Kim Mulkey has surpassed the press form in any of the men's coaches. We had a WAPO article and an LA Times article written about her in like the same day. Never has the women's game had so much intrigue, been so high profile. And you know what? Things are changing as a result now, fam. Remember NBA All-Star Weekend? Probably not, because it was super forgettable, but I bet you remember the Sabrina versus Steph Curry matchup, which was the highest rated portion of the whole weekend. Well, now the NBA is talking about expanding that this year to include Caitlin Clark and Klay Thompson. Maybe even Damian Lillard. Steph and Klay versus Sabrina and Caitlin? Oh my God, watch the fuck out. The NBA is already planning how to leverage the popularity of Caitlin Clark, a woman who hasn't even played a single professional game at their signature midseason marquee event. Not one WNBA game, and she's going to play for the Indiana fucking Fever, folks. She hasn't even been drafted yet. This is crazy. This is surreal. But that's how the game is changing for the women, and it's crossing over into the NBA. That is how big Caitlin Clark has become. Like her, hate her, but you know you're not indifferent. Here's what I think, though. As big as the women's game is getting, there's still a lot of haters out there. They like to change the goalposts a lot. You know what I mean? Like, they just go from one to another. They downplay how big these games are. And then they're faced with the undeniable facts, which I just gave you. They say, oh, that was just a one-time thing. You know, Angel Reese versus Caitlin Clark in the championship game. It's a flash in the pan. Ratings are now going to die without Caitlin Clark. That's where they're at. That's where the haters are at in the life cycle of Cope. People are saying that the surge in popularity is due only because of Caitlin Clark, and they are wrong. Even after Caitlin Clark goes pro, college hoops is in an incredibly good place. Paige Beckers, a.k.a. Paige Buckets, is coming back for another year at UConn. Not going to the transfer portal, because that's not who she is. She's hopefully going to be joined by AZ Foot. Indiana Sydney Parrish, she's coming back for another year. Iowa State sniper, who I absolutely love, Emily Ryan, very underrated, she's coming back. South Carolina's little super frosh, Malaysia Phil Wiley, maybe the best player in that program's history when she's done. Juju Watkins is scoring records as a freshman. Juju Watkins might become the new Caitlin Clark. Audie Crooks, they're going to become household names as well. All while Angel and Camila Cardozo and Caitlin are going to help fill up the WNBA arenas around the country. So yes, women's hoops is having a moment, people. And that moment is going to change the landscape for college women's hoops and even for the NBA. And if I were you, I wouldn't bet against it. All right, let's move on. We got some serious beef going on in the NBA. I love some beef. I do. I love it. I like raw beef. I like cooked beef. I like thick beef. I like thin beef. Oh, yeah. I love me a good NBA feud. Kind of the best kind of beef next to rapper beef. Only the chances of an NBA player getting, like, I don't know, like clowned on a mixtape, very, very low. So who are we talking about here? Embiid and Kat in the battle of these gippy knees? No. Russell Westbrook and Pat Bev reigniting the war of two shorts? No. Nikola Jokic and Markieff Morris in Shot in the Back Part 2? No. What we have here is the best kind of beef. Old white guy owner beef. Oh, yes. Matt Ishbia, owner of the Phoenix Suns and notorious owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers, Dan Gilbert. There is no beef quite like old crusty white billionaire beef. I love it so much. It's like so clown. It's so corny too. It's like my mortgage company is gonna kill your mortgage. He's like, what are you fucking talking about? Like I'm not. They Rocket Mortgage is a sponsor of the Footprint Center. Not anymore. It's not. Anyway, let's go into it. It stems from the fact that both men own billion-dollar mortgage companies. Gilbert owns Rocket Mortgage, which is no longer in Footprint. And Ishbia owns United Wholesale Mortgage, which you probably haven't really known much about. The two, though, have had gross revenue of nearly $6 billion combined in the last year. And they also got, like, hometown around the corner, fuck you beef. Dudes born 20 miles apart in Michigan. They currently live in the same suburb of Detroit, just 15 minutes apart. Even though Dan Gilbert's like worth three times more money than Ishbia. By the way, Ishbia's a lot younger. Two companies are at war right now with each other for the mortgage market. I will sell more homes than you. This is so corny. So they like hate each other, I guess. Like their owners hate each other. Gilbert calls Ishbia a schoolyard bully. Ishbia was caught, and this is the best part, a leaked email saying this about Rocket Mortgage. We fucking took those cocksuckers down. Fuck them. And we're going to keep fucking sticking it to them forever. Fuck those guys. We're number one. I pound my chest, my beat off to fucking getting the best interest rates. We probably screw over disenfranchised community more than you, Rocket Mortgage. Oh, God. These guys have to attend owners meetings together, and apparently they've never even said a word to each other. How petty is this feud? Well, when Ishbia decided he wanted to own the Phoenix Suns, they all had to vote on it, all the owners. And the vote came in 29-0, undefeated. No votes against. But Trista, there are 30 teams. Yes, Dan Gilbert abstained from voting. That's his fucking level of I gotcha, bitch. Like, I'm just gonna not vote. The feud has not made its way to the court quite yet, but I tell you what, they're playing one another very soon, and these guys are gonna be getting into each other's grills a lot in the coming years, and I expect it's gonna spill over at some point to the mortgage streets. All right, let's move on. How crazy. These dudes are so corny. Anyway, we don't talk much about official retirements around these parts because everybody's retiring all the time. Too far after the fact for anyone to care. And usually one of those deals where someone signs like a one-day contract to retire with the team that they haven't been on in 7 years, but they want to retire with their team. But I will make an exception for E.T. Phone Home, the alien, Rajon Rondo. Fingers like E.T., head like E.T. Rajon Rondo has officially retired. His hands were so fucking long, bro. Like, his hands, if you see his fingers to palm ratio, it was absolutely not from this planet. Anyway, Rondo, four-time All-Star, all-defensive team member, led the NBA in steals once. Assists three times, actually, which is pretty impressive. Won titles with the Lakers and the Celtics. Dude, baller. Has not played in like 2 years. He's now made it official, though. I'm hanging up the sneaks. Probably was official, though, when he got caught with drugs and a gun in Indiana. But here, you know, it is what it is. Rondo always had that smoke when the lights were the brightest, right? Like, he would sell it, and you'd think he was cooked for, like, 82 straight regular season games. And then he shows up to the playoffs, and it's like it's 2014 all over again. He said this. I tell people all the time, this wasn't a dream of mine. It was a goal. I was able to lock in, stay disciplined. I didn't party in college, but it was worth the sacrifice of me getting to be where I wanted to be in life. So many teams could use a Rondo right now. So many Lakers. So many bummy-ass squads. So many teams try to find a Rondo in the draft or find one at the deadline. It's hard. There's not a lot of Rondos in the world. My favorite thing, though, is like, there's a few things. One, I love that Rondo would be able to call out plays before they would even happen, right to your face. Like, you're running this, DHO, blah, blah. And then number two, I love how Rondo would just say things with a straight face that was like meant to be a joke, only no one would know that it was a joke. Like when he asked how he got along with Kings coach George Karl at the time, former Kings coach George Karl. And he said, it's not been going too well. We got into a couple arguments the last couple of days, but hopefully we can continue to talk and get better. It was meant to be funny, but he said it just like, everybody's like, wow, it sounds bad between you and George Karl. Apparently everyone thought there was smoke between them. It was like, wasn't. Rajon Rondo gone, but he will not be forgotten. Okay, moving forward. Embiid is back, folks, like the seats on a Cadillac. And he's back doing Joel Embiid things, which means that the Sixers are now back to winning games, especially against contenders. Newly coiffed, great hairstyle, Joel Embiid. I love it. Fresh off of announcing a brand new sneaker deal. With who? Adidas? No. Nike? No. Puma? No. New Balance? Skechers basketball shoes, which is its own fucking wild development. JoJo took to the floor for the first time in nearly 2 months to shake off the rust and take on the OKC Thunder. No simple way to ease yourself in the game, right? When you got the Thunder on the menu. I'm surprised he even did that. Also, the Sixers are going to get fined. Because they said he was going to be out all day. All day. And then like 40 minutes before the game, I think like 6:05, they were like, and guess what? He's back. He's back, folks. And Joel Embiid is here to be bad news bears for the Celtics, Bucks, and the Cavs. Pretty much anyone in the top two. One of them is going to catch the Sixers well before they should. Can you imagine, like, being the Celtics, you win at 80%, like a historic level of winning, and your dessert, your gift for that is Joel Embiid fully healthy and the Sixers in the first round. Tyrese Maxey. You know, I don't know. I don't know what to say to that. If I'm freaking Joe Mazzulla, I'm like, what is this life? Anyway, how did he play? Stat line not super impressive by his standards, by like Joel Embiid standards. He had 24, 6, and 7. I like need 10 rebounds from Joel Embiid on a night-to-night basis. But he did have 3 steals. The last of those steals came with the Sixers up 1 with 36 seconds left. And then he picks Josh Giddey's pocket, dribbles the length of the floor, puts his shoulder into Chet, who crumbles like an old piece of cornbread and a cheap coat, and then hit 2 free throws to put the game on ice. And then the Sixers ended the game on a 22-9 run. And they won 109-105 over the best teams in one of the best teams in the West. Maybe the best team in the West as it relates to the standings. Also, they covered 3.5 off of a last-second foul with, I think, 2 seconds left to go, which is absolutely crazy. Look the fuck out. Anyway, Joel said this. This one took a toll on me mentally. Even at the level I'm at, this game was the hardest by far, but it's only going to get better from there. And I think I saw Spike Eskin, host of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez, the Sixers podcast, said, leave it to this game to be the one game, his first game back, to take everything out of him, emotionally, spiritually, physically. I forget how the quote went, but it was basically that. Anyway, if Joel Embiid is going to get better from here and you just beat the Thunder in his first game back and he wasn't even himself, that is a scary-ass thought. He is back, he looks lean, he looks hungry, and he looks healthy. And the Sixers sit at plus 4,000 for the NBA title. Woo! Might want to jump on that, because that line is going away real fucking fast. Moving on, we end the show with a special guest interview with NBA insider Robin Lundberg of SI Sports Illustrated. Robin appeared on my other show, BetMGM Tonight, where I was joined by my co-host Ryan Horvath and Nick Ashew. Robin starts out by answering, who is more important to their team coming off the injury list, Joel Embiid or Karl-Anthony Towns? Let's get into it. That's all the time that we have for this episode of The Heat Check. Thanks to Robin and the whole crew at BetMGM tonight. Come back Thursday for an all-new episode and check out the feed for past episodes and mini-episodes, which drop unexpectedly, like Joel Embiid into the lineup. Do not forget to follow The Heat Check as we head down the stretch of the season. That means download. That means subscribe. That means tell your friends. All of them. Even Ace Bailey, the Rutgers signee, who came into the McDonald's All-American game proclaiming that he was him and he was him and I am him and he is whatever. He is the future teammate of Dylan Harper, and then he steals the show. Tell him, hey, Ace, if you talk that talk, you got to walk that walk. 6 points in the McDonald's All-American game is not going to cut it. Improve your game toss on the Heat Check with Trista Crick. And do not forget to follow us at this Heat Check and at Trista Crick on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. And of course, at some point, YouTube!